From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nicole Ogrisco with the news on this day in Maine, Monday, December 9th, 2024.
This Day in Maine is made possible by Now You're Cooking, celebrating 24 years of selling cookware, kitchen tools, gadgets, and fine wine on historic Front Street in downtown Bath, open 7 days a week.
$20,000 Electricity Maine customers will soon receive refunds of up to $4,000 under a new settlement. Maddie Smith has more.
These refunds are the result of a settlement reached between the Public Utilities Commission and the Public Advocate's Office to address almost $6 million that Electricity Maine was found to have overbilled clients back in 2022. The refunds will be received via prepaid debit cards, and some customers may qualify for a second payment. The state says the overcharges are calculated based on how much the customer was paid above the standard offer price for electricity at that time. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Maddie Smith.
L.L. Bean has announced another round of layoffs. The Freeport-based retailer says 50 to 75 employees will be affected, or about 3% of the company's main workforce. A spokesperson says L.L. Bean is continuing to evaluate the, quote, fluctuating retail landscape, and that the workforce changes will position the company for long-term growth. Some of the departures are voluntary, and affected employees will receive severance packages. This is the second time this year that L.L. Bean has announced layoffs. In April, the company let go of employees as it reduced hours at its call center. Governor Janet Mills and members of Maine's congressional delegation are pushing the Biden administration to extend work permit eligibility for asylum seekers. Ari Snyder reports.
Under a current temporary rule, work permits for eligible immigrants automatically renew for a year and a half. Mills, along with Senator Angus King and Representative Shelley Pingree, are now urging U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services to make the rule permanent. King says it would not only benefit asylum seekers, but also the employers who rely on them.
This is really just practicality, and it's talking about saving taxpayers money, letting people work for a living, pay taxes, and supporting Maine businesses that are all looking for workers.
King says any rule change could be reversed by President-elect Donald Trump, but he says he hopes this rule would survive an immigration crackdown because it benefits businesses. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Ari Snyder.
The East Millinocket Fire Department has given a 60-day notice to four unorganized territories that it plans to discontinue ambulance services in mid-February. George Buswell, the director of unorganized territories in Penobscot County, says the fire department is paid more than $9,000 a year to provide services. And he says county commissioners approved more than $180,000 in funding 2 years ago to help the fire department purchase new ambulances.
And it kind of hurts to think that they've forgotten that at this point.
Buswell says he's hopeful an agreement to continue services can be reached. The town administrator for East Millinocket says, like many communities, their emergency services department is facing challenges, but they're working to find a solution. Although last year saw low numbers of winter ticks on Maine's moose population, the state's moose biologist is expecting much higher numbers this winter. Lee Cantar says that's because the moose population has increased this year, and with more moose come more ticks.
Now here we are today talking to you, and the numbers came in last week on our winter ticks, and it shows that the tick numbers are going to be considerably up, and we're going to expect a moderately bad, if I can say that, spring.
The state has tested new management techniques, including more permitted hunting in a small area of the state, with the hope of reducing the moose population and disrupting the winter tick population. But that method hasn't worked out, and Cantar says it will likely conclude after 2025. Laundry pods are often labeled as green and even biodegradable, but recent research suggests that the soft PVA plastics used to hold together detergent and dishwasher pods may not actually biodegrade as advertised. Now, a small team in Maine is working on a bioplastic alternative that could one day be used in your favorite detergent pod. Molly Yenking reports.
In recent years, products like Tide Pods and detergent sheets have taken off. Over 25% of Americans have switched to them since they came on the market more than a decade ago. For some, it was because of the sustainable label. Alexa McGovern is a breast cancer survivor and new mother, and says she was looking for ways to remove environmental toxins, including plastics, from her home.
I mean, I'm literally probably doing like 4 loads of laundry a day between my daughter and myself, and we're just a family of three.
She says she used laundry pods for a long time because of the eco-friendly pitch. Cleaner, less water.
They came in a cardboard box and they marketed the less plastic piece and all of that. I liked the format, like it was super easy.
But according to new research published in the International Journal of Environmental Research and Public Health, pods may not be biodegradable, green, nor clean. That's because they're coated with polyvinyl alcohol, a type of soft plastic. And while it dissolves in water, researchers and environmental advocates say that, like salt, that doesn't necessarily mean it disappears.
Very strict conditions are needed for this to biodegrade. Now, biodegradable is a really loaded word these days. Technically, if you expand it between now and a million years from now, pretty much anything is biodegradable.
Shaw Institute Executive Director Charles Ralski and his co-author were commissioned by Blueland, a sustainable cleaning company, to test whether PVA soft plastics truly biodegrade. They found that PVAs would only break down properly under perfect lab conditions.
If it is stable, yes, much of this material can degrade. The problem is that nothing in the environment is stable, even looking at morning to night.
Ralski says roughly 75% of the material, which had dissolved into particles smaller than nanoplastic, is making its way out into the environment. Their paper landed them in a firestorm. Two scientists, one from the American Cleaning Institute, wrote to the journal disputing the paper and asking for its removal.
Then it turned into this massive campaign and this massive attack.
The journal called in an independent researcher who eventually validated the study, and the challengers withdrew the request. Still, the Environmental Protection Agency questions Ralski's research. It says the paper makes assumptions about how the PVAs break down in wastewater treatment plants. And the agency recently declined a petition asking it to remove PVAs from its Safer Choice Chemicals list. McGovern says whether or not PVAs are proven to be safe or biodegradable, she believes there's no need for them to be in household laundry products.
It's like if you were driving an armored vehicle to the grocery store and you just need to take your like sedan. Like you don't need polyvinyl alcohol or plastic in a laundry pod in a situation in which it just needs to go back into being water.
McGovern thinks she may have a solution, replacing the water-soluble plastic with a plastic alternative made of kelp, a type of algae that grows in the ocean. She founded Dirigo Sea Farm a year ago to develop the kelp biorefining process and is working on a patent. Their small lab space up in Blue Hill is filled with the briny smell of seaweed. Lab assistant Jack Tennant shows me the process of turning the rubbery kelp into a plastic-like film.
Essentially, what we're trying to do is take out what makes kelp kind of goopy, kind of mucousy. That's alginic acid, and that is what we're trying to use to make the film.
The kelp bioplastic is sent to manufacturers in reams that resemble paper. And McGovern says that step could one day be done in Maine using established technology.
The slurry we're creating is similar to that of like paper milling. And so being able to take that slurry and create sheets of paper is similar to what we're taking an algae slurry and then creating sheets of film.
And with Maine, there's a lot of old infrastructure from the paper industry. A lot of that machinery can be applied to our process here.
The key will be to ensure the kelp alternative resembles plastic as much as possible. That means being resistant to temperature changes while shipping and having a solid shelf life. McGovern sources kelp from all over Maine through Atlantic Sea Farms, one of the biggest kelp companies in the country. But if successful, the new bioplastic would likely create a demand that would outpace what Maine kelp growers can produce.
This total was 500 pounds. This is called runway kelp, so it's literally just dried on a runway after it's harvested.
As much as 5 million pounds of kelp would be needed to replace about 72,000 pounds of PVA plastic. The average bulk order for a batch of pods from a bigger company, like Seventh Generation, If her demand exceeds main supply, she'll look to Alaska and Iceland for other sustainable sources of kelp. If all goes to plan, Dirgo Sea Farm's first batch of 10,000 kelp-based laundry pods will be ready for online sales by next spring. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Molly Enking.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, we'll hear about a special collaboration with PBS Frontline, Maine Public, and the Portland Press-Herald about their coverage of the Lewiston mass shootings. I'm Nicole Ogrisco. Thanks for listening.